You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting here on 860 AM. And as you know, we not only serve Philadelphia and the tri-state area of New Jersey and northern Delaware, we also are on the air all over the USA, and you can do that right now simply by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. And after the show is over each week, there is a Listen Anytime link up there, and you can share that with family and friends. And I ask that you do so because we get a lot of good people and a lot of great comments from listeners who are really pleased with what's happening with what we're trying to do, and always say, boy, wouldn't it be great if people in the national news media and also in government would do what we're doing, trying to promote American workers. And I welcome your comments and suggestions. Send them off to me, to michael@americanworkersradio.com. Well, I'd like to first of all say thank you to our panel members, Mark Andel, who, as you know, is the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Conley, National Small Business Advocate. Also joining us is Bruce Bassett-Powell, a SCORE mentor and businessman, and our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash, always happy to be with you to talk about common sense issues. It seems that so much common sense is not used anymore. In fact, people use other people to get what they want, and in the end, they just throw them out like a piece of junk in the end. But joining us today for this hour of power is a very well-known person on this broadcast. It's Professor Michael Bussler, who is a noted guest here on American Workers Radio and also on many radio broadcasts. Professor Bussler is a professor of finance at Stockton University in Galloway, New Jersey, where he teaches undergraduate and graduate courses in finance and economics, of course, with a demonstrated history of working in the higher education industry. Boy, do we need a lot of that today. You know, what is taught in schools is really something that has to be pushed by parents more and more. A lot of parents were pushed aside, and I have to say, they wanted to speak up. Many people, I know people in my own family, my own kids want to speak up, but all these school boards and teachers and political leaders, you know, just have to be this way and that way. They don't want to shake up the message or shake up the school. And it's our tax dollars that make the public schools in America tick. It sounds like a lot of work to be in contact with your local officials, with your school boards, with your teachers in the school. However, with modern technology, it's very easy. It's very convenient. You can text them. You can email them. There's all sorts of way for you to put your thoughts and concerns in writing. Schools became too much under the control of school boards and teachers. Now we see the results of what that is when they pulled out all the tech classes, the shops, the tech, you name it. It's gone from the schools. They have 1,000 reasons why it's gone, but none of it makes any kind of sense to parents of today, because parents of today see that their young people have to do something positive with their life. And they also see the fact that we need qualified people in many industries, well-paid industries, heating, air conditioning, welding, everything. They're not there. And as people are retiring and they are joining the heavenly choirs of angels, there are just no replacements for them. So, but first I want to welcome our special guest. And of course, I'm going to ask Larkin, Bruce, and Mark to ask him some very good questions. And I'll start off the conversation. But Professor Michael Bussler, how are you doing? First of all, I know you're down the shore. How's the shore weather been down there for the last 2 months?
Well, thanks for having me on your show, Michael. As you know, I always appreciate it. The month of September is the nicest month to be at the Jersey Shore. The air is usually in the mid to high 70s. The water is still over 70 degrees. There's not a whole lot of crowds to deal with. I look forward to September. I love the summer. I mean, you can't beat the Jersey Shore in the summer. But the month of September is just a very pleasant month, and this has been a very pleasant September.
How are you, Professor, how are you finding the economy down there at the shore with all the inflation and all that we've been experiencing?
Yeah, so the economy is, based on what happens in the summer. Most of the revenue is incurred from April until September. Now, there's not a whole lot of data in yet, but the small business people that I talk to tell me that the beginning of the summer, January and July, was very strong. Most of the small businesses outperformed what they did last year. In August, things started to slow down a bit for them. Not a real bad situation, but not as good as June and July. And we're only halfway through September, so I don't know how that is. But I suspect the beginning of the summer was strong. The end of the summer is a little bit weaker than they would like.
Very good. Well, I've been to the shore a number of times this year and in many years in the past, and I see that the people that are down there are really, you know, cheered by being there, but the cost of things has not been very good for them. It's just too many dollars being spent on things that should not be costing them what it costs them. You know, Professor, the talks that are going on in Washington right now are almost ridiculous to me. They're playing all this game and they're saying, oh, we have to do this. We want to avert a government shutdown and all. Well, first of all, I'd like to say this. I'm going to ask you and Mark and everybody to respond, especially yourself, because you know what inflation is doing. And I'm sure in the classroom, the people have been telling you, not only now, but over the years, how living life has to be respected by the politicians, the business people, and not kill them with inflation. Right now, that's not happening. Do you feel the talks taking place in Washington regarding the new budget represent a good economy for us, you and I, or is it just a matter of fanfare in America?
Well, the answer is it depends what happens. So the government's fiscal year runs from October 1st to September 30th, so the fiscal year is over in a couple of weeks. If they want to be authorized to spend money in the next fiscal year, they have to pass some kind of either a resolution or a budget, which will never happen, but at least a continuing resolution to allow some spending to increase. Now, what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks? And I'm not sure what the answer is. Last year at this time, the conservatives in the House of Representatives passed a bill saying that we will allow the debt ceiling to increase. In order to do that, we have to have significant reductions in government spending. And that bill was passed by the House of Representatives, wasn't even taken up by the Senate, and even if it was, the president wouldn't sign it. Speaker McCarthy then had to negotiate with other House members and the Senate, and eventually the president, to come up with some kind of a way to move the country forward. The solution that he came up with was really a slap in the face to the House of Representatives because it didn't do nearly as much as what the House of Representatives wanted. And keep in mind, most of the inflation we have today is a result of excess demand in the economy. And the excess demand came from two things. One, for whatever reason, the Federal Reserve kept interest rates near zero all of 2021 and into 2022 when the economy was rapidly growing. So I don't know why that happened. Secondly, it's due to the massive government budget deficits. In the last, will it be fiscal years, 2021, 2022, and 2023, total deficit spending will be about $9 trillion. That caused so much excess demand that led to much of the inflation. So last year, the House of Representatives said, okay, we'll allow the budget, the debt ceiling to increase, but you have to agree to reduce government spending significantly. In fact, I think they're only going to allow a 1% increase in government spending. Some of them wanted a absolute decrease in government spending. The House passed it. Nothing happened with it. Something else ended up being signed. So what's going to happen this time? The conservatives in Congress are saying, we're not going to let you snooker us again. So we're going to now insist that the government forget balancing the budget. It's going to take a while for that to happen, but at least start to reduce government spending to get the size of the deficit down. Otherwise, inflation is going to continue to be a problem. And as Ronald Reagan said, inflation is a cancer. And if you don't treat it early and aggressively, it gets much, much worse. So the members of the House of Representatives said we need to get this budget in line to bring inflation down. And this time they said, we're not going to let you snooker us. So if we don't get something that really holds the line on government spending, we're prepared to shut the government down. Frankly, I think that's a strong position, and I think it's about time somebody took that position. The problem is, with every thought of a government shutdown historically, and in 2011, we actually did shut down for about 3 weeks, but every time that happens, it's the conservatives and the Republicans in Congress that get blamed for it. So your question to me was, what do you think is going to happen this time? And the answer is, I'm not sure. So I'm not sure how strong the conservatives in the House will be. I'm not sure how much the Democrats in the Senate are willing to compromise, and then what the president will sign. We'll just have to see what happens.
You know, Professor, the biggest thing that I don't understand, they're talking about this. They look like they're in such angst about everything. No one is telling the people that the way things are going right now, and if they have to close down, well, that's what has to happen. Government spending is putting you and me, every American, in debt every day of the week, every second and every nanosecond of the day. The biggest thing that I see, and I witness a lot of these government budgets, one of the things is they put out so many dollars into the states during COVID. What is going to happen when those monies are out of the government system? Somebody's going to have to be taxed in order to keep the government to where it is today. This doesn't make any sense, and yet people in Washington still haven't been explaining that to the people. They're just, it's trying to be too nice for no reason. Another thing that business people, I speak to them, they're trying to have business conferences and things like that. Government in Washington, there's still no discussions on how to cut taxes on unnecessary regulations on businesses to help them, to give them a reason to open in America. We need to have people trained for jobs, have them ready to go into a job to help America's economy. How can we as a people sit back and allow 535 people in Washington put us in debt every second of the day?
And the current administration is doing exactly the opposite. They're adding more regulations to business, which makes it harder for businesses to get started and grow. With that, and they're interested more in raising taxes than lowering them. President Biden keeps saying some people aren't paying their fair share and we're going to get them. And he's talking about the higher income earners. The truth is the bottom 47%, almost half of income earners, the bottom half, pay zero federal income taxes, zero federal income taxes. Now, they pay Social Security and other taxes, I understand that. But with income taxes, they pay zero. It's the top 53% that pays the entire federal budget. Income tax bill
right.
budget. And in fact, the top 20% of income earners pay about 84% of taxes. So how can you possibly ask higher income earners to pay more? And in addition, if you ask them to pay more, it actually hurts the economy. Why? We have a capital-intensive economy today, not labor-intensive like we did back in the 1950s. You saw a lot of people on an assembly line. Today we have a capital-intensive economy where you see robots and automation. So in order for business to grow, they need to raise new capital. The new capital comes from the highest income earners and from business who earn income, pay a small amount of, now the corporate tax rate's down to 21%, which is good, and that creates more retained earnings. The retained earnings become capital for expansion. The Biden administration wants to raise taxes on the upper income earners that will reduce capital formation, and they want to raise the corporate income tax rate from 21 up to 27%.
Yes.
That, too, will reduce capital formation. And if you can't grow, the economy can't grow and it stagnates, particularly when the government is deficit spending, you end up with a stagnant economy with high inflation brought about by all that excess demand. And that's a problem called stagflation that we got rid of, and I hope we can keep it off. It's a very dangerous problem and a very difficult problem to solve.
You know, Professor, you are absolutely right. And the thing that always amazes me when I speak to these political people, I asked them, I said, you're always talking about everybody paying their fair share at the top. I said, but you have to take into consideration the people at the top are paying more than their fair share because they're employing people. You know, that doesn't come from just from the skies, the money to employ them. They're operating businesses. They're paying taxes. The people they're employing are paying their taxes through the payroll systems of these big corporations. It never makes any kind of sense to me. I asked this gentleman just the other day, and he didn't have an answer for me, but he said, that's a hell of a good idea. I said, when are you going to speak about the people who are living in poverty, getting into the workforce so that they can contribute to the taxes and feel better about themselves and add to a better economy in America? If I asked you that, Professor, what would you say?
The key to ending poverty is not to give people free money, which started with Lyndon Johnson and his Great Society. We started paying money to everybody. The key is what Trump did. He lowered taxes so business could expand. That provided opportunity. So lower income earners now had opportunity to earn their own income, buy their own stuff. The poverty rate was 14% when Trump took office, dropped down to 10% and historical low because opportunity was given to people. And that's what people really want. Look, the lower income people, they end up taking this money because they don't have any other choice. But what they really want is the opportunity to earn their own money so they can buy their own goods and services. So what we need to do is to provide opportunity. The opportunity comes from business expanding. In order to expand business, we need capital. We should work on creating more capital, not less.
You're absolutely right. You know, as they're fighting in Washington with this budget issue, I think it's really time to stop the clock until the real issues are addressed. You know, we can't stop time. But maybe we can stop the nonsense going on with the backroom deals that have put America in debt now for 30 years plus. 30 years, it's been the worst ever. Before that, the debt was very small. All of a sudden, we're top heavy with a nightmare. And yes, it's true. Giving out money to people who are not doing something to help earn the dollar, you know, being into the system. Yes, you have people that have difficulties, health reasons, and things like that. However, putting these people into training programs, as I said earlier, we have so many people that are retiring and they have no replacements. We have people telling me that they've been supposed to retire for 12 and 13 years, no people to replace them. They have to remain on the job. And they said, I wanted to walk the beach. I wanted to do some travel. And I just keep getting begged and begged. And because the company I work for was owned by the grandfather, then the son, and now the grandson. And I don't want to see this guy go out of his mind. So I'm working. He's real young. I'm a little older. But we get along great. And he says, but there's nobody coming up the ranks to take the job. Professor, I'm going to turn to Mark Andel. Mark, how are you doing? Tell us everything.
Good, good. Hi, Mike. Welcome, Professor. I was excited when I heard you're coming on. And Larkin and Bruce and Henry are always making us sound good. Can't help with the looks, but that's okay, Henry. We understand. Professor, there's just a lot going on. I'm living the dream. I've got the two general welding, fabricating, manufacturing companies, and then the three brick-and-mortar Made in America stores. So these challenges times, I've got my own radio show. We're opening up. I talk to probably 5 to 10 businessmen a week on purpose. And I said years ago, a couple of years ago, buckle up. And buckle up's here. A lot going on. So when we talk about the rapid inflation, I'm in, let's say, discussion with one of my top suppliers where they said I'm over my credit limit. Well, I'm not over my credit limit. I took less widgets than I ever do. But since the widgets doubled in price, it puts me over my credit limit, which I think is very interesting. I spent an hour writing an email explaining the current times because of rapid inflation, because of widgets ordered. I'm over credit limit. And, you know, these big corporate companies have no pulse, have no feeling, have no heart, don't believe in relationships. They just cut you off or put you on hold. So I want to talk to you about, you know, the inflation, and I think you touched on it. I love when you say inflation's a cancer. Absolutely. But my number one problem, and we've discussed it for years, but now, last week, every meeting I do, is to find somehow skilled trade workers. It's such a shortage. Work has, it's not a priority anymore. Workers for many companies are just standard workers. A lot of them have no common sense, so filling a coffee cup takes people weeks to train. So somehow we wiped out common sense. But otherwise, skilled trade workers, for instance, MIG welders, I'm returning a work last week. I'm shipping it back to my customer because I can't finish it because I have no workers. Everybody in this Western New York area, I'm going to hit my 1,200th bus tomorrow at the Made in America store. We have 158 this year. Unbelievable. They're seeing Niagara Falls, and they're coming to see the Made in America store. But I talk to every person, shake their hands, and the problem around the country, you can't find workers. So, Professor, I'd like to get your opinion on that.
So all the federal government programs allow people to survive without working. As a result of that, what we call the labor force participation rate, which is the percentage of adults between 18 and 65 who are either working or actively seeking a job, has declined significantly. And the reason for that is you can survive without working because the government has increased all of these programs that they have. The other thing, I think, is the work ethic that we all used to have. You know, you feel good about going to work, about earning your own money, and then going out and buy what you want to buy with the money that you earned. And you felt much better when you spent money that you earned. That work ethic just isn't here anymore. You know, people are now believe that they're entitled to all of these government benefits. They should be able to get increases in food stamps. They should be able to get welfare payments. And if they can't pay their rent, they should be able to get some kind of a waiver. And they want the government to pass laws that won't allow them to be evicted. And for up until really this month, the last 3 years, somebody graduated from college, they didn't have to make payments on their student loans. They suspended those payments. Now that ends now. So people were saying, you know, I don't really want to work. The government's giving me all this money. I don't have to work. I'm going to stretch this out for as long as I possibly can. And that has deteriorated this work ethic. And as a result, it's going to have, I believe, long-term detrimental effects.
Yeah, you know, Professor, I get buses from around the country, so we're getting 5 a day, 3 a day. I just did a bus from Dubuque, Iowa. you know, Saturday. And these guys, you can tell when you shake their hands who they are, if they're farmers, if they wear jeans. Their handshakes are double in different areas of the country. It's really outstanding, the education you get from the buses. But I talked to a guy, he said, you know, about the worker shortage. I tell my speech, my story, and he agrees. He loves that I support skilled trades. I want to get metal shops, wood shops back in schools, give kids a purpose. But he said, you know, you'd laugh back in the day for John Deere, the home, Dubuque, Iowa, that area. He said they used to request you were a farmer. This was in the 70s. You're a farmer. You're over 200 pounds, and you're over 6 foot tall. He said, could you imagine asking that these days? But that was the work ethic then.
Yeah, things have really changed, and unfortunately, they've got to change back. You know, we have to get back to somebody saying, look, I want a day's pay for a day's work, not I want a day's pay for not doing any work. And that's where it is today. It has got to change. It's having long-term detrimental effects on the economy. And for people themselves, psychologically, I think it's just putting everybody in the wrong frame of mind. You certainly feel much better about things that you own when you know, I earned the money to buy that. I chose to buy that. This is mine. I paid for it myself, and I want to take pride in the work that I've done.
Yeah, you know, another professor told me once, find a need, fill a need, you know, find a want, fill a want, but the want's gone. Like, I still work extra, I plow extra. That want's gone, and you're hitting on a good thing. The culture has changed, and COVID, the pandemic, made it worse. We're not sure how, but that the top discussion at the debate should be the worker shortage, because it's going to kill this economy, and it's bigger than we've ever thought. We can't talk about training in schools, because we can't wait 4 years. I can't wait 4 years for people. And we have such a problem, but I'm finding in Texas there's more workers available because fossil fuel cut off than jobs available, so more candidates. You know, I'm working with ZipRecruiter in every way possible to try to find some skilled trade workers, but it's such a problem. You know, and another thing I want to talk about, we've had the pandemic, we've had the inflation, rapid inflation, product shortage, and then the chip shortage for trucks. I do a lot of truck equipment. Now you got the UAW strike. You've got people requesting a 32-hour week, 30 to 40% raise. And the funny thing is with the Democrats, whoever, they want 30 to 40% because expenses went up 30 to 40%. But they want to do less hours, too. So, you know, you can't make all this up.
I find that shocking. The last column I wrote was the UAW's demands are ridiculous. Look, I like to see people make more money when they're producing more goods. You're supposed to be paid according to the value of your output. So if you figure out how to make more and how to be more productive, you're entitled to a raise. What I find shocking is that they're asking for a 9% increase in wages over 4 years. That's almost 40% when compounded, and people are just not thinking that that's crazy. You know, years ago, you know, before all this craziness started, people got a 3-4% increase in wages. Inflation was 1.5-2%, so you got a real increase in wages, and everybody was happy. Now, all of a sudden, people are asking for these huge wage increases, and I agree with you, Mark. The reason they're doing this is to say, hey, inflation was 9% in June of 2022 on an annualized basis. How do I know that's not going to happen again? And to protect myself, I need at least a 9% wage increase. The danger with this is it starts what we refer to as the wage price spiral. So you say, well, inflation went up, I need a 9% raise. Well, then labor costs go up 9% and business has to raise their prices. Well, then
and here's
inflation
the
goes up a little
question.
More, and then they want higher wages, and you get in that spiral.
And then the vehicle goes up, Professor. You know,
exactly.
You know, I love that you backed Donald Trump. Everybody's afraid to, one of the smarter presidents we've ever had and the best times I've ever had. But, you know, he had this country self-sufficient on fuel and oil, and we were running great. The one big mistake was that executive order to cut fossil fuel off because, you know, in all this, instead of raising all the prices and wages, if you lowered the fuel price, it would give people that disposable income they're looking for.
Right. It would also lower the cost to manufacture because every manufacturing process needs energy. And when Biden got in and he said, I'm going to cancel the Keystone Pipeline, I'm going to make had more regulations to make it harder to get permits, I'm going to prohibit drilling on federal land, and at the time,
We were producing about 12.5 million barrels of oil a day. It dropped down to under 11 million barrels a day. That created a decrease in supply, and whenever you decrease the supply of anything, the price is going to go up, and we saw energy prices go up significantly. We're about to see energy prices again go up significantly. If you bought gasoline the last month or two, you know you're paying a lot more than you did back in the beginning of the summer, and unfortunately, energy prices are going to go higher, I think, in the next month or two. The oil-producing nations, OPEC in particular, wants to see the price of oil up to about $100 a barrel. Last year or so, it was down in the 70s before it all went up. Now it's back up to 90, 94 cents and $94 a barrel, and they're trying to get it up to 100. That's going to continue to make inflation worse. Again, I want to emphasize, this is a cancer. You have to deal with it early and aggressively before it gets out of control, this inflation.
You are absolutely right, Professor. Mark, you know, because you're there, you see the inflation, you're experiencing the inflation with your every purchase that you make for your business. And yet, government, when they're doing these talks in Washington right now, they should not settle anything unless they restore total regulations on the back, on the border of America. Nobody's allowed to come into this country. You know, for more than a century, people were coming into this country. They were invited by businesses in America. Today, it's an open door policy. As soon as you walk in, you get an access card, you get everything. You know, they're shipped all around. Look what's happening in New York City. That's a very interesting. I give the mayor credit because he's the first one really speaking up. And by the way, would you want to walk down 42nd and Broadway and see the homeless from the people coming illegally to this country over the border? Would you want to see them panhandling on the street at 42nd and Broadway? What the hell is going on?
And I just want to say one thing. The ratio with expenses going up and sales going down for five of the businesses I just talked to this week just doesn't work. You can't have expenses going at all-time high, 20, 30, 40% insurances and all your expenses to run a business, your fuel, your utilities, and then also your sales going down because of the lack of workers. It's just a recipe for disaster.
You're right, Mark. I want to ask the professor one more question. I'm going to ask Larkin to join us for a few minutes. I want to ask you, Professor, what would you say would be a way for us to end this inflation right now and start to demand that the prices be reduced in the United States so that we, because once prices go up, the unions and all are saying the prices went up, we need money to, you know, cover the high cost of inflation. Is there a way to get this inflationary spiral going the other way to bring prices down so that things could be made and purchased in America competitively again?
So the first thing I would do is reverse the energy policy and let the oil companies start producing, allow the Keystone Pipeline to come through. That'll bring energy prices down significantly. Energy accounts for about 30% of the consumer price index. So that's one thing I would do to get started. The other thing, and nobody's going to like this answer, but the other thing, well, let me get the one other one before this, the one you aren't going to like. The other thing I would do is stop all the massive deficit spending. Start to reduce government spending. Look, reducing government spending is nearly impossible. But if you just hold the line on government spending, don't spend any more money, eventually tax revenue will increase as the economy grows and you'll be able to come close to balancing the budget. So the two things are energy and then reduce government spending. Now, the one nobody's going to like is much of the inflation, or at least part of the inflation, is caused by consumers just spending. Now, they had a lot of money to spend because during the pandemic, the federal government gave out free money to everybody. Whether you were negatively impacted financially by the virus or not, everybody got free money. The average family of four got over $11,000 in free money. Well, they couldn't spend it while you had lockdowns and things shut down. Then everything opened up, and they said, boy, look at all this money we have. We're going out and spend it. That excess consumer demand also pulled prices up. I thought the economy would be in recession by now because the consumers ran out of all that excess money. But what did consumers do? They started putting purchases on their credit cards.
Right.
Total consumer credit card debt is up over $1 trillion. Never was that high, up over $1 trillion. So we have to discourage that, and here's the part you're not going to like. And the only way to do that is to nudge interest rates up even a little higher. The Federal Reserve today going to announce at 2 or 2:30, probably they're not going to raise interest rates. I think they should nudge them up a little bit more so consumers say, wow, look how expensive credit card debt, and it's already very expensive, but look how expensive it is. I'm not going to use my credit cards unless I have some emergency. So what happened in the last year, consumers were going on vacations, hospitality spending went way up. They didn't have money to do this, so they just put all of it on their credit cards. So we have to discourage them from using their credit card and spending money that they don't have, which is the same thing that the government does.
Allowed to happen. You're right. I just want to add one thing about the travel industry. I'll get to that. The travel industry was very good at this time. They helped to bring some of those travel prices down a little bit, and that helped to attract a lot of the travelers to put the money on their card, but they thought they were getting great deals. It was even happening at the shore places. If you called and you stayed so many days, you got this, you got an extra night. If you went an extra day and this and that. But the main thing is government continues to give, and they know, government knows that inflation is eating the money that they are giving the people, even on the access cards and others. Many deserve them, but also we have to start thinking that every time the government gives out a dollar, that dollar doesn't equal what it did 2 years ago. So naturally, they're going to have to raise the access cards, all the benefits, so that those people can just keep up with inflation. It doesn't seem normal to me. I feel our national leaders, all of them, Democrats, Republicans, are allowing the American people to be legally robbed. They're stealing from them by allowing this inflation to continue. Inflation is happening right before our eyes, right before the people in Washington, and they're doing nothing about it. When gas goes up, when all of energy goes up, travel, heating, cooling, our homes, the businesses, it affects everything. And yet they just pretend like it's not happening. They're worried about the budget being passed on time. But how about after the budget is passed? What is going to happen with all the illegals coming to America? Who's going to pay for them? Who's going to pay their health costs? What happens to all the inflation that's destroying a lot of our senior citizens? If you're on a fixed income, you cannot be paying $400 or $500 a month extra for just regular needs in the household. You just can't do it. Then government needs more money, so they have to raise your property taxes, and they're talking about additional sales tax in states that don't have. In Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, we have 8% sales tax. Some of the places that have 6 are saying, well, to help us to just keep government where it is, we may have to go to 8% too. It's everybody is looking to go up with costs, not to keep them regulated, and not to address the issues as to why those costs continue to go up. And the one thing you mentioned, Professor, is energy costs did this. If those energy costs were down, we would be able to at least try to get that inflationary economy down and get those prices down. But the way it is now, and nobody in Congress fought to stop it. They did introduce a bill. Oh, I clap for them. Yay. They introduced a bill in January. It was the lower energy cost bill. And here we are in September, and nothing's been passed. And very few people even remember that the good Republican House introduced this bill, but they did nothing with it. They introduced it, they passed it, they send it to the Senate, they put it on the table, and that's where it is all these months later. Larkin Conley, can you greet our very special guest, person you spoke to many times, our good Professor Bussler? Dr. Larkin Conley.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good morning, Dr. Bussler. I can only hope in my heart of hearts that you're very, very close to or in Long Beach Island, New Jersey, my favorite place in the world. I have so many memories from that little town, it's not even funny. But and I'm very jealous that you're down there. boy, would I love to be there. Well, Stone Harbor has holds a bunch of my memories too. Well, whatever. I just hope you're having a great time.
I certainly am.
You unfortunately, or fortunately, stole my thunder because I wanted to talk with you and get your position on dealing with the inevitable event that I think is happening, and I think it's probably going to happen before 2050, and that is a serious change in the world order. And I think nobody pays any attention to it. They just assume that they're going to wake up every morning and the United States is going to be number one. And we know that no system of government, no economic system, no currency, and certainly no empire lasts forever. Yet almost everyone is surprised when the ruination comes. And you talked about consumer. The president talks about the economy is strong. He sent Blinken out yesterday to assure everybody that the economy was very, very strong. What he failed to mention is that consumer debt is at an all-time high. Americans are so spoiled to not having to look at something that they want and say, we can't afford that right now. We have to work a little harder or reduce our credit card debt or whatever. But consumer debt in the second quarter of 23 was $17 trillion. $17 trillion that every American riding around in their big pickup trucks here in Florida have got to pay back. They owe it to the banks and the credit card companies who are, by the way, going, isn't this fun? And they're charging 20, 24, 23. I saw 28% interest charge on a credit card the other day. It's so foolish. And I think consumer debt and the fundamental part of our army and its weakness and lack of funding is going to create a major change in the world order. Your comments.
Well, I tell you, I think you're right. I mean, you take a look at all of our wealth that has been transferred to China because we wanted things to be produced at a much lower cost. So much of our wealth has been transferred to China, and China is not using it in the most friendly ways, and they're using it in ways they want to be the number one power in the world. They want to replace the U.S. And they start spending money in such ways that they are looking to do that. I don't know how far this will get, but I agree with you, Lark, and that if things don't change in the U.S. Shortly, this good run that we've had for the last 250 years or so may be coming to an end. You know, every top dog going back to the Roman Empire lasts so long, and then it deteriorates. And one of the things that causes it to deteriorate is the lack of values, which we're seeing here today, and this idea that you don't have to work, that the government's going to take care of you. And that, too, will tend to deteriorate the country. Look, the U.S. went from the birth of a nation to the largest, most prosperous economy in the world in about 150 years. How did we do that? In my opinion, there were four things that allowed that to happen. One, we encouraged individual freedom. As long as you didn't infringe upon anybody else's rights, you can pretty much do what you wanted. Secondly, we encouraged individual responsibility. As long as you were mentally and physically able to take care of yourself, everybody took care of themselves. You had family to help, of course, but individual responsibility. Thirdly, we had low rates of taxation. So whatever you earned, you knew you were going to keep most of it. That was a big incentive for people to produce. And fourthly, we had a very limited role for government. They provided defense of the country, a legal system, et cetera. But other than that, they pretty much got out of the way. So individual freedom, individual responsibility, low rates of taxation, and a limited role for government, in my view, is what allowed America to become great. This current administration is exactly opposite to all four of those. They want to limit individual freedom. They want to tell you what to do and who goes where. The government wants to control industries, health care. They're going to look at to control education. So they want to limit individual freedom. Secondly, they're replacing individual responsibility with social responsibility. The government will take care of you. Thirdly, instead of low rates of taxation, they want higher rates of taxation so they can pay for all the things that they want to do. And fourthly, they want a big role for government, not a limited role. That going against those four principles as the current administration is doing, I think, is the beginning of the end of America the way we see it as the top country in the world.
I agree fully. I don't think there's any question of that. And the fact of the matter is Americans, you know, my mother used to say to me about my children when she was counseling me on how to raise my three kids. She would say, your children have to learn the response no, and they have to learn what no means. And the fact of the matter is, my father would say, your outcome is just that. It's your outcome. It's not my outcome. It's not your wife's outcome. It's nobody's outcome but yours. You right. have to have a sense of personal responsibility to do the very best you can. And if you don't, the last place you should look is to the government to get you out of the hole. We had a pandemic. It was a pandemic worldwide. I'm going to be honest. What did Washington do about that pandemic? They did everything in their power to make sure that they personally didn't take a hit on the results when the whole country needed to take a hit. And and then to complete and close that circle, we decided, well, you shouldn't have to pay your college debt, not during a pandemic, so we'll cover that. It's absolute craziness. But a new world order is coming. I don't see how, in Lord's name, we can possibly prevent it. Bruce knows and was schooling me on a new group of nations. I think he said it was called Brexit, unlike Brexit in Great Britain.
BRIC.
China, Russia, Iran, Venezuela. It's all of these countries that are buying together to be the leaders in creating this new world order.
Yes, this is what I've been hearing, Larkin. And our dollar is being devalued every hour of the day. And they want to push our dollar off the face of the earth and make, you know, other income and other means of supporting and paying for things come to light. And that's where, you know what happened? As I'm listening to everybody today, What I'm seeing, national elected leaders got so used to not being monitored, not being questioned by the taxpayers, so they just did whatever they want. And now, as I look at the United States debt clock, Larkin and everyone else, we reached a new number, $33 trillion. Take a look at it for yourself. That's government statistics. Now, if we wanted to pay that down, pay that money off, give a lot of that money back to the people we owe it to, including China, we would have each one of us would have to put out, each taxpayer would have to put out $254,000 each. And government is putting that debt clock out, and they're not addressing what's on the debt clock.
And what would the country do if our offshore lenders decided they wanted to call the debt?
Well, that's right. There are things, Larkin, I keep hearing through the system. And number one is they don't want money. They want land in America, and they want businesses that are up for sale to be turned over to them. That's a lot of the stuff that's going on. Do you hear that, Professor?
Yeah, I do. So what would happen if all of the most of the debt is held by American companies and American individuals, but I think about a third of the debt is held by other countries, mostly Japan and China. I think they each have about $1 trillion. So what would happen if they suddenly called that debt? Well, what the U.S. would have to do is sell more bonds to try to repay that if they could. If it ends up coming out of American capital, it's going to create a capital shortage, which will slow economic growth. The other thing they could do is simply print more money. Now, if you print that much more money, the money becomes less valuable, as you've been saying all along here, Michael, becomes less valuable, and it will lead to a rapid inflation problem. Look, we can't do anything right away about the debt that we have. Eventually, we're going to have to deal with it, but not right away. But look, the first thing you do when you're stuck in a deep hole is to stop digging. So if they stop turning up these big deficits, we wouldn't add more to it. So let's try to get the budget as close to balanced as we possibly can, and then we'll start to work on getting the public debt down. If we can stop it from growing, at least in a relatively short period of time, that's the first step in getting this debt down. And you're right, it's a tremendous burden on every single American. You take the total debt, divide by the number of taxpayers, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars that each one of us is responsible for. We have to stop that from getting any worse first. And every administration kicks the can down the road. They say, well, let's just get by. We'll let the next administration worry about it. Well, the thing is, we're at the end of the road.
We are
no more kicking the can down the road.
No, it's time to stop the clock. And Bruce Bassett Powell has a question. Bruce, welcome our professor.
Yes. Hello, Professor Busler. Nice to meet you, finally.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank
I just you. Have a quick question. Is what exactly happens if the government is shut down? What is the biggest impact of that?
So if you remember back in 2011, the government shut down for about 3 weeks. Essential services continue. But it's the non-essential services that end up stopping. The getting a passport today is a real nightmare, but things like that would end up getting a little bit worse. So some of the government services and some of the things the government does, national parks may get shut down, you know, some of those things. But we lived through a 3 week shutdown back in 2011. I remember towards the third week, people were saying, well, I know the government shut down, but it really is not that hard on me. So it wouldn't be that difficult. The real problem with shutting down government is the Republicans always get blamed for it. No matter what happens, it's always the Republicans' fault. So they have to be very careful with that. But I would rather
stand firm and say, look, we're going to stop this nonsense now, rather than saying, let's give in and, you know, we'll worry about it next year or the year after.
The House has already blocked funding for the military. I was reading today. So I guess that's sort of where it all starts.
I don't think that's all defense spending. I think that was somewhat selective. But again, I don't know. I didn't read about that.
I really think they should shut down the government until that southern border is addressed. We can't keep bringing people into this country and have them more abused in America than they were in their homelands. People laying on the streets in New York and all. This doesn't make sense to me. What is going to happen during the cold weather? Okay, it was hot over the summer, so they had a little, you know, outdoor relaxation. But when the winter comes, it's food. You have to take care of them health-wise and all. Yes, Larkin.
Well, I was going to make a comment. If the government shuts down, then it shuts down. And guess what? One of the elements that suffers should be Congress. Well, they'll still get paid.
No pay. It should be no pay until it's everything is back to normal. In fact, I'm going to bring the professor on back in a few weeks. Professor, I'd like to talk about a lot of this compensation for Congress.
Sure.
And by the way, why hasn't Congress been addressing the situation of poor jobs in this great country of ours? This is absolutely, it's something that nobody has been talking about. I was at a festival 2 weeks ago, and people were coming up to me and say, I tune in all the time, either on the radio or on the internet. You people talk more common sense than I hear in most of the major media. What can be done to change it? I said, I don't know, but just keep contacting the stations. Professor, I'm going to ask you to come back in a few weeks, and let's continue this conversation.
Thank you, Michael. It would be my pleasure.
It is always a pleasure. I want to say thank you again to Mark Andel, Larkin Conley, and to Bruce Bassett Powell, to our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, and to all of you that are going out of your way to support the Buy American Made campaign. Remember, your asking questions where you shop has really been helping. A lot of people are speaking up. They are asking their suppliers, I need to get more American made so to satisfy my customers. Let's get to it. Until we speak again, everyone, may God bless you and may God bless America, and stay strong.